So it's been really interesting kind of just going through this series, and we've heard Tim and Dad share a lot of different elements of kind of where they were at and the ways that they came to know Christ, but also the community that they shared in the time, just in those first years, getting to know God. And we thought that it'd be really interesting, because I've been talking to Dad about this, thought it'd be really interesting to just kind of take a message here this morning and just talk about what it was like being one of the kids who was growing up in this. Of course, Mom and Dad found Christ at Iowa State, and they were partaking in ISU Bible study and those kinds of things, and then they got married, and then they started having a family. And so whereas they met God in college, we just grew up in a home that was very Christ-centered. And I think that there are maybe some different experiences there, and so that's what I want to talk about today, just tell you a little bit of my story and some of the differences there. So let's go ahead and pray, and we'll dive in. God, I do just thank you again that you're God in heaven. Lord, this is, it's a mad world. Lord, it's just mad. But it has been, they say the proof of the pudding is in the eating, Lord, and I just know that there have been times in my life where I really wanted to do my thing and wanted to go my way, and none of that ever made me happy or fulfilled, or there was never a confirmation that anything I was doing mattered or fit into a greater context. And yet, as I've learned to take you at your word, and I've learned to just trust you and say, all right, I tried my way, I'll try your way, everything falls into place. God, it just makes sense, and I just thank you for that, God. Not only even just for the rest of this life that I have to live out, but also for the hope for eternity, that there is eternal life, and that it's going to be a good life. It's not going to be a mad world when we get to eternity either. It's going to be a perfect world. Just look forward to that. God, I thank you for the time that we have together this morning. I just pray that you really would make it coherent. Pray that you keep us moving, and I pray that whatever you wanted us to get here as a church family this morning, we would be able to get. So commit that to you in Jesus' name. So if I'm going to tell you my story, of course, it just makes sense to start with background information. So let's go fast. As you guys know, I've said it a couple times already, I was born into a Christian home. My dad was my dad, my mom was my mom. You know my mom and my dad. There were some really wonderful things that came with, I mean gifts that I received as a result of growing up in a Christian home. Peace was the norm in our home. There was not a lot of strife. I mentioned last week, I have never seen my father lose his temper. I always felt safe at home. Also, the fact that Dad loved Mom, I heard a saying one time that if you want to love your kids, love your wife. And the first time I heard that, it just made perfect sense to me because I had experienced that. I never noticed until I got to see, you know, as I grew up more and got to know more of the troubles that existed in some of my friends' homes. I never knew what a gift that was. But Dad loved Mom, and so it never crossed my mind that our family could be in danger, you know, that we might split up, that we might ever be on our own, that we might have to fend for ourselves, anything like that. Never a thought like that. What a gift. Right? And then Dad also helped all of us kids become good friends. We all get along. It's a really, really good time even now when we get together. And so just there were so many, just every relationship inside our home was wholesome. It was really good. And of course, as Mom and Dad were constructing this house, they modeled their lives after Christ, and so it was very easy to see that there was no hypocrisy here. We didn't just go to church because they wanted the church to teach us values or something. These actually were their values. And so we could see that their faith was real, that it was sincere, that it affected their lives, and it was very winsome. And since God was such a part of our family, just becoming a Christian was just almost automatic. There was almost no, you know, how could you not become a Christian? So I do remember at 6 years old, praying a prayer to ask God to forgive my sins and to be my Savior. I also prayed that prayer about a million other times because I thought that you lost salvation every time you did something wrong again, which is really, really evidence for the fact that I didn't understand salvation. but nevertheless, it was definitely in there. Just the concept of wanting to be forgiven, knowing that I'd done wrong, knowing that Jesus was the one who needed to forgive my sins, those kind of things. Up through high school, I thought I was a Christian because everyone I knew thought I was a Christian. Everybody at church assumed I was a Christian. I assumed I was a Christian. I did the right things. I said the right things. I knew the right things. And I hid everything else. So that was kind of me. I also, it's important as we get into the story, just that you understand a little bit about me psychologically, though, too. I grew up, I had an older brother who is a fantastic older brother who is very different than me. He's incredibly gregarious, very outgoing, very popular, very likable. I was selfish, awkward, and nerdy. And so I didn't fare very well socially. And it was pretty common that, we would have friends over, and there would be a friend that was my brother's age and a friend that was my age, and the friend that was my age pretty much wanted to go hang out with Tim because he was just, like, way better at hosting people. So I got a pretty good dose of understanding that I wasn't good enough in a lot of ways. Wasn't very likable, couldn't really make it on my own, couldn't win friends to myself, couldn't be a friend, those kind of things. That was a big deal. That shaped a lot of things as I continued to grow. And part of what it built into me was a real drive to find my identity in other people, right? If I couldn't be a remarkable person, I wanted to be associated with remarkable people. I think that was just kind of a natural reaction, and that also was a big part of me forming my identity. I never, ever, ever, it never crossed my mind that I should or could be my own person. I was just going to be somebody's crony. And I was fine with that, as long as it was a cool person. When I got to high school, something really changed. Tim was a senior the year that I was a freshman. And our school was about 1,600 people. And Tim was universally known to be the most popular guy in the school. Tim had 10 times more friends in my class than I probably even knew in my own class. He just knew so many people. But since he was an awesome older brother, he took me with him everywhere he went. Within a couple of weeks, I had, like, I don't know how many friends in the senior class, which in high school, that's like a big deal. It's like, oh my gosh, like, you're a freshman and you got senior friends? They're like 3 years older. It was a big deal. And Tim bringing me around gave me the chance to kind of learn some social skills and learn how to be a friend. And his inclusion really changed the course of my life. In that sense, like, just kind of gave me some skills to work with. And for that reason, largely for that reason, high school was the four most carefree, happiest years of my life. I felt like I got to fit in for once, like I could just, everything was open to me, and I got to make friends and have friends. But Dad at one point pointed out to me that Tim was just sort of wired to be more of a social butterfly and suggested that I might be one of the a person who's just more geared towards having fewer relationships, but that went deeper. And that really resonated with me. And so I began kind of looking for friends that I could have with me for the rest of my life. And by the end of high school, I had four that I was just like, this is it. You know, if I can just live life with these people, this is going to be fantastic. One of them happened to be the girl that I thought absolutely without question I was going to marry this girl. Which was also a really, really big deal. Like, I can't, this is important. It's important that you understand that, like, for a guy who did not naturally think of himself as good enough, the notion of being good enough to be marryable or to be in a relationship, that was very, very closely tied to my identity. If someone would trust me that much, you know, with their life, like, what higher honor could there be? What higher confirmation, you know? And then, in my early 20s, things changed. First of all of our, all my four friends and I, we did not all go to the same college. So already there was a bit of separation that I wasn't expecting. But in 2006, there was a chain reaction that was sent off in my life, which dismantled every dream I had ever dreamt, and I had, I believed, very good reason to believe that God was the one who called down the order, because There's no way it could go as wrong as it did without some intention. That's the way it felt. And the first step was that two of my best friends started dating. And this was the girl that I thought that I was going to marry. And not only did she start dating somebody else, but she started dating my best friend. And if she had started dating somebody else, I would have gone to my best friend and like just kind of latched on there for like support and comfort and this kind of, but she started dating him. And he was the only one that was around me at the time, like geographically, right? My other two best friends were sort of removed from the picture. So this was difficult just because it would have been difficult to not be the guy, right? But it meant a lot. First of all, the fact that my two best friends were starting a club that I couldn't be in. For the record, there's nothing wrong with that. Absolutely, it just totally makes sense. I'm like, that's what needed to happen. That's what should have happened. It was just really, really painful. And to see that, it wasn't, they never came to me and said, we hate you now. But what it meant was they started a club that I couldn't be in. And so there was a huge distancing there to where even the friendship that we had before, it just wasn't accessible in the way that it had been. But even bigger than that, we shared the same church community. And so there was a real conflict here for me too, because the church community is recognizing we've got people coming together. Let's celebrate. Let's be happy with them. And I'm sitting here like I'm blowing up inside. But if I say anything, it's going to rain on the parade. It's going to be way too difficult. It's going to bring everybody into a conflicted point, and you know what's even the point. And so I didn't feel like I could even access my church community at that point. And then another thing that was really hard was that even the people who did know my situation, which there were a handful of people that understood what was going on, but it just felt like it was pretty simple. I was told literally once, I don't know if I should say it. I do believe I was told to my face, look, this is so common, it's almost cliche. And I believe that. Love triangles happen. Like, that's for real. That happens all the time. But pain is not cliche to anybody who's experiencing it. And so I felt like there was also just this, I perceived that this was being treated as a very trite thing. Whereas, you know, for me, this was my soul blowing up. And I just felt like I was getting the, you'll be fine kind of thing. It's like, well, not if that's how I'm getting treated. That's how I felt. Like, and so that was my conundrum, was all of a sudden I was in more pain than I had ever been in my life. And what you need generally are relationships that are there. But just the nature of the pain that I was in sort of took me out of the relationships that would have been able to help, right? The only really positive or affirming relationships I felt like I had were still with my family. But at this point, I was living 2 hours away from my family. And so it was just the geography of it just didn't work, that I really felt like I could get the support that I needed at that time. And so this point, this is the crux of my story. This is the really crucial moment. And in this moment, I learned that my faith may not have been as rock solid as I thought. Matthew 7, 24 through 27, you want to pull that up? Jay says this, therefore, Jesus is speaking, he's saying, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. I'll find it. I know where Matthew is. Hang on. And then he says, but everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. What I think is really interesting about this passage is that Jesus is implying that the rains will come, right? Jesus gives no indication that anyone can build a house on sand and maybe 1 in 100 chance they'll enjoy fair weather for the rest of their life. So that, you know, good news, you got the house built quick, you got it built cheap, and you're never going to need quality. Not going to happen. What's implied in this verse is that the rains are coming. And that's also like one of my favorite verses in the Bible is John 16:33, where Jesus says, "In this world you will have trouble, but take heart because I have overcome the world." That's Jesus telling us, listen, this life, it ain't going to work out here. Not to say good things aren't going to happen here, but it doesn't work out here. So don't try and get comfortable with this curse. It doesn't work out till I come back and make everything new. Good things can happen, but trouble's coming, so you better be ready. And this, I think, is sort of the shift in paradigm that I wanted to talk about. This is how I think it ties into the series. Let's see. Oh, one more note that I want to make is that it seemed like God was being unnecessarily mean to me. You know, I felt like he was rubbing it in my face. Look, if you wanted to say no, you wanted to destroy dreams, that's fine. But the way that you're doing this, you know, it's personal. It really feels like you're going to lengths to make this as bad as it can possibly be. So I felt at the time. And that made me doubt his goodness. And that put my faith in a frightening situation. My house was pretty well collapsed. And this is where I wonder if there's a difference between what Dad and Tim have been talking about from their generation and their perspective coming to know Christ versus my journey to getting to know Christ, having started, basically I was born in the church, you know? And it goes like this. I think maybe many in Dad's generation, I think both you and Tim have expressed to varying degrees that when you got saved, you were ready to give all for God. And part of that was because you had tried your way. And for different reasons, found it's not working. And so when you find God and you say, oh my goodness, like this has the answers that I couldn't get, then it was just a complete confirmation. I've already got the contrast. I know this way doesn't work and I believe this way does. And so you're just ready. You're convinced, ready to go. I'm going all in and I'm never looking back. But I can speak for myself here, and I feel like some other kids, maybe who grow up in Christian homes, I feel like we have to meet God twice. We appropriately learn about God growing up, but the gospel is about a relationship. And I've just had the picture in my mind that it's like, you know, getting IKEA furniture, right? Here's all the materials, but some assembly is required, okay? And it's very easy. It was easy for me, and I think it was easy, like I told you, I spent all the way through high school, I thought I was a Christian because everyone I knew thought I was a Christian. I think it's very easy for Christians to think you've got the materials, you're all set. No. Some assembly is required. And if the assembly doesn't happen, the rains will come, the streams will rise, and the winds will blow and beat against your house, and you don't have a house. You have everything you need to make a house, but you don't have the house. It's just mistaken to think that we're finished when we start. Yeah. Yes, this gets tricky, because at the point of my crisis, I had appeared to have been following God for years. My church might have anticipated that I'd get through this struggle just fine. In fact, I would have anticipated that I would have gotten through. I thought I had a faith that was incredible. I would have expected that I'd get through it just fine. But this was the first time that I'd ever been tested this fundamentally. This went down to the core. It took me years to realize this. But as a person, to that point in my life, the reason that I believed in myself was because this girl believed in me. That was my currency for having self-confidence. Well, if she chose a different direction, I was completely undone. She didn't do anything wrong, but it really exposed the fact that I had some values put in the wrong place. And it took me a long, long time, the better part of a decade, to figure out how to sort that out, just how to, my fault, I was wrong. That's kind of how that went. But getting to know God was different in that sense. This was my first struggle. People from your generation may have had your struggles before coming to know Christ. This came while I knew Christ and just really threw me through a loop. So some thoughts on this. Proverbs 27:23 says, and I include 24 here. It says, "Be sure you know the condition of your flocks. Give careful attention to your herds, for riches do not endure forever, and a crown is not secure for all generations." You just got to pay attention to each other. We got to know what's going on. Things change. I wrote this sentence. I like this sentence, actually. Things change, and sometimes when things change, it makes sense to change things. In a battle, a healthy warrior can fight. But if a healthy fighting warrior is severely injured in the course of the battle, he is, one, no longer healthy, and two, may no longer be able to fight. Most militaries make use of medics, and they tend to the injured. Now, medics do not make the warriors go back and continue fighting. That's not how they help. Typically, they help by removing the warrior from the fight so they can go away and experience healing. And after he's experienced healing, perhaps he can re-enter the battle. But usually, that's how things work. Get him out of there, right? I also want to look at Ecclesiastes 3. I just think this is interesting. I didn't type it up because it's a lot, but we can read through it pretty quickly. First 8 verses say this: "There's a time for everything and a season for every activity under heaven. There's a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain." 2020. "A time to search and a time to grow, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace." There's much about being in a relationship with God and understanding our mission, our objective, and how that's going to be accomplished that is still relational. It's not all one thing all the time. So we can say that God wants to reach the world, and we can say that God is interested in seeing people saved. And we can understand that's our mission. That's what we want to do. We want to share our faith. We want to see people come to know Christ. But we also can experience tremendous hardship in our lives where it makes sense to slow down, stop, and say, "Wow, actually, I'm hurting right now. Like, I have some things personally that I need to deal with." There's time for all these things. I have a passage in Genesis that I absolutely love. It's Genesis 33:12-14. I love this. Jacob and Esau were brothers. They've been apart. We'll get to this later. They've not seen each other in probably, do you know, Dad? Like 20 years? 20, 21 years. Yeah. They've not seen each other in quite some time. Esau meets Jacob. It's Esau and a whole bunch of warriors. And Jacob, it's Jacob and all his kids and his family and his flocks and his herds. And they meet, things go well. Esau says, "Let's be on our way and I'll accompany you." But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are tender and that I must care for the ewes and cows that are nursing their young. If they are driven hard just one day, all the animals will die. So let my Lord go on ahead of his servants while I move along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children, until I come to my Lord in Seir." I love this. Jacob just understood. "You're in a different position than I am, Esau. That's okay. Nothing wrong with your position. Also, nothing wrong with my position. All right? I can't go as fast as you. That's okay. Like, you go on ahead. I'll catch up with you as I'm able to." I love just the awareness of it. And it's meaningful that he understands, look, if I do drive them hard, if I try to act like I am you, I'm going to kill my animals, all right? It's going to put tremendous stress here that's unneeded. I'm in a different stage of life. I'm in a different position right now than you are, and that's okay. Your position is okay. My position is okay. It just means we need to respond a little bit differently. It's a different time of life for us. It's okay to know that, and it's okay to respond accordingly. So what's the point? We're meant to be on mission as Christians, but in a battle, it is a battle, and there are injuries and casualties. We need to pay attention to each other to know when to challenge and when to encourage or comfort or support. My crisis was precisely that I felt completely isolated from all my important relationships, from my friends, my family, and my church. Sometimes I felt like my church didn't want to hear that and that they just wanted me to get back to work. I played guitar. You know, I was in the band, like those kind of things. So I had duties and I had responsibilities, and sometimes I just felt like, well, just do your stuff. I'll get to that in a second. I felt like it may have been less obvious, you know, that my faith had been challenged here, that my faith was shaken in the process of this, that I was hurting more deeply and dynamically than maybe it looked like on the surface. Because, I mean, I grew up as an American. I know that you're only loved if you can perform. You're only loved for as much as you can do. So, of course, I was trying to keep face as well as I could, and still trying to look good in front of everyone. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I was successful in that. They just thought, well, he's doing all right. Like, just kind of get back to work. But it made me feel like I was wanted for my utility to the cause, but that no one really cared about me. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 3. I just think that this may be a scenario where we can see something like this. It says, if I speak in the tongues of men and of angels but have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains but have not love, I'm nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing. And what I see pretty clearly is that all three of these conditions talk about stuff we can do. You might be talented, you might be smart, you might be incredibly generous, but it's all just a show if we're not actually achieving like love, if we don't actually have a heart. And I think that's part of the way that I felt. At this time in my life, that's part of the way that I felt. I do have a couple clarifications that I feel are really important here. It's important to realize that at this point I was hurting. I was hurting horribly in my life, and we must understand this. Hurting people are not rational. Okay? If I fall and break my arm at home and Melissa comes and says, do you like the red dress or the blue dress? I'm not thinking about that right now. That's not what's going on. We can have a wonderful conversation about fabrics and about colors and these kind of things. Right now, I'm trying to make my arm right work right again, all right? Like, there is a blaring message that just is unavoidable in my brain that says, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. We're not going to have a rational conversation right now, okay? It doesn't happen physically. It doesn't happen emotionally. And so this is also really important. What I'm expressing to you guys are my perceptions. This is how I felt inside the body of Christ at the time. That does not mean that this is what was intended by the church. Honestly, looking back at it, I think a lot of people did as much as they could. I don't think I had an understanding at that time what my responsibilities were as a hurting person to try to communicate or what I needed to take ownership of in terms of addressing some of my own difficulties. It was a very confusing time, but I just want to make it clear. I'm talking about how I felt at the time, not what was intended, not what was really done. Those could be two very different stories. And in fact, I've since talked to a lot of the people who were in mentor or leadership roles in my life, and found a lot of comfort and a lot of peace just with how things went there. So I'm saying that I read a lot of ill will into most of my interactions at that time. They weren't necessarily justified. Nevertheless, the way that I felt was that my community was demanding my services while withholding their support, and that can and almost did have a polarizing effect. There was a period of time where I was tired enough in the church that I just thought, maybe this would just get a lot easier if I would run away. I was living in Iowa City at the time. I was the only person there. Maybe I could just go find a way to live paycheck to paycheck. Just start a new life. You know what made the difference, though? Why I didn't? It was relationship. I didn't feel like I had good relationships inside the church, but I still had good relationships with my family. And I understood that to leave my church would also separate me from my family. And that was not okay with me. So I kept on hanging on for a little bit. I said before that I think many kids who grow up in a Christian home have to meet God twice. I got to know God through stories and trivia growing up with my family. I met God personally in this crisis. And I believe that the entire purpose God has was to meet with me alone. That was the idea. I think that God did this in a way that all my relationships would distance because I was trying to find my identity in these relationships. God couldn't talk to me about my identity between us while I was trying to hide in other relationships. God finally said, okay, I'm going to take the relationships away, and it's just going to be you and me. I did not like it. I did not appreciate it. I was not thankful for it. But I believe that he did this for the purpose of meeting with me alone. And so in some of the things that I've said, I think if I went back and I did the whole thing over again, there may be like two or three small things that I would like change. Maybe things I might try to like, maybe I could communicate better this way. Maybe the church could have done this a little bit differently, but not really massive differences. But I also want to say this, in a real sense, I think that the whole point of what God was doing was trying to get me alone. So even if we corrected those things and we say, hey, fine, do it right, God still would have had to do something to get me alone, and it would not have been fun. So we talked about Jacob meeting up with Esau earlier. One chapter before Jacob meets up with Esau, he meets with God. Jacob, at this point, is under incredible duress. He's moving his entire and very sizable estate, and we can understand, he just said, he can't move quickly. He can't. He can't drive anybody hard. Well, he finds out that Esau is coming to meet him with a whole bunch of armed men. What does that usually mean? And on top of that, Jacob, which figuratively means he deceives, had fled 20 years earlier from his home because he had cheated Esau out of his birthright and his father's blessing. And at that time, Esau, he knew, wanted to kill him. And now Esau's coming with an army. So Jacob's a sitting duck, and he's got no reason to believe that Esau is not coming to kill him. You guys can understand the stress of that situation. He divides his possessions into multiple different groups, planning for the eventuality that he may be attacked, and hoping that if one group is attacked, the other groups might escape. Can you imagine that? Dividing your children into groups so that if some of them are killed, maybe some of the others could live, hopefully. This is a very, very desperate night for Jacob. He sends his groups across a river while he himself stays the night alone on his side of the river, and the Bible records that a man wrestled with him until daybreak. Genesis 32, 26 through 28 tells us how it ends. The man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." They wrestled all night. But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Admission. I'm a deceiver. I'm an underhanded cheat. I was named for that. The man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Israel means he struggles with God. Anecdotally, I think it's interesting that some of the most ardent and outspoken atheists in the world seem to have had a religious background. I often wonder about this story with Jacob when I think about that. It seems that all of us, sooner or later, have to struggle with God. But to get the blessing, you have to be one of the ones who makes it all night. One of the ones who's willing to struggle all night. I wonder if some atheists just became too discouraged in the course of the struggle to finish out, in which case they'd get all of the pain and none of the reward. And I can imagine that perfectly because I almost did. It really was not. I mean, if you knew me while I was living in Iowa City, you would think that guy is lost. Like, I don't know what we can do for him. He's angry. He's independent. Well, of course I was independent. Everyone I knew, I didn't trust. God was suspect. My relationships were all suspect. I didn't know what to believe. I didn't know what to think. And so what happens generally is if you're in that spot, you say, well, I'm just going to trust myself. Didn't get me very far, but I didn't know what better to do. I was working through that. I almost didn't make it all night. But to bring the message full circle here, oh wait. Yeah. So this also kind of harkens back to the Matthew 7 passage. It's the question, you know, will our foundation stand or will it not stand? Will the house stand or fall? Bring the message full circle. We've been talking about the way we were from the perspective of Dad and Tim's generation. I think it's possible that their foundations were tested in some ways prior to coming to Christ. Thus, when further difficulties came their way, they had already built up defenses or strengthened their foundation. Having had the benefit of growing up in a Christian home, I, in the following generation, only had, shall we say, an inherited foundation. This was proper, but it wasn't automatically my foundation. I had not built my own. Didn't know I needed to. I had the materials, thought I was done. It was therefore a different kind of struggle when the rains beat against my house. I thought I was already a strong Christian with a complete foundation. It was disorienting, demoralizing, and discouraging, on top of all my other personal pain, to discover that my faith was weaker than what I had thought. I didn't pass with flying colors, but I did manage to hang on through the night, and here are some of the blessings I think I received when it was all said and done. Before my crisis, I had always tried to mask my insecurities and inadequacies by trying to be in groups or relationships with people that I admired. Right? That's that thing again. If I couldn't be incredible, I wanted to be associated with incredible people. When God took all of that away, it seemed mean, and I wondered if God was mean. But I think he was getting me alone long enough that I could finally listen to him so that he could tell me what he thought of me, that I'm his masterpiece, I'm his creation, his intention, his delight, and that he doesn't want to hide me. He doesn't want me to hide in groups of remarkable people. He made me remarkable in my own right, and he wants me to learn to communicate that and display that in a manner appropriate to one of God's masterpieces. God addressed my insecurities by showing me that my identity is secured on his authority. No one else on earth has the clout or jurisdiction to be able to change that. It was shortly after this coming of age, if you want to call it that, shortly enough that I noticed it, that God provided me with my own wife. And now we have two beautiful kids. He's provided us a home and many other things such that I've been greatly humbled and contented and comforted. It's amazing to me. When I was going through this, I really believed that the purpose of life was just to cope. I didn't think healing was possible. I didn't think there would ever come a day that I would just be like, okay. I didn't think I would ever be happy for my friends. I'm happy for them now. And I totally agree with how things went. It makes sense. I've experienced healing. God has given that to me. Didn't think it was possible. This is also the moment in my life that I feel like I got to know God. That is worth its weight in gold. The purpose of Christianity is not to be a religion, but to be a relationship. I feel like I got to know God. I got to meet him. Luke, this is God. God, this is Luke. Kind of moment. I've had a different and a real relationship with him ever since. It is a direct relationship that is distinct from the inherited one. We're getting there, guys. Almost done. This season is also the time that I learned many of the thoughts that I've shared here at church about emotions, and it's provided a lot of the source material for the songs that I've written. I think God will continue to use my temporary pain to achieve eternal glory, thereby redeeming my pain even to me. Even I'm okay with that plan. You want to cause that? Give me this much pain, give me this much in rewards and glory. I'm fine with that. Like, honestly, Like, in retrospect, if you came and told me that's what the plan was, I would choose that. I would say, okay, let's do it. God just didn't tell me what the whole plan was. I think that was part of it, too. I think he just said, just trust me. Like, please do not sit there and ask me to explain every little atom in existence to you before you'll just trust me. So, that's my story. Life has been good. It's gotten so much better. So many things have just cleared up for me, kind of in the process of going through this. And what I notice also is that there are things in my life that I get. They're just part of my life. I get to have them. They are mine now. Forever. And it cost 5, 6, 7, 8 years of just hell. It was horrible. It was awful. Never want to do that again. Ever. But that was just a few years. And now for the rest of my life, I get all these things. That's worth it. That's worth it. So what for us? What for us as a church? The church has commands from God that it needs to follow. Right? We talk about the Great Commission. We need to go. We need to share our faith. We need to see people come to know God. We're commanded by God to do this. The church is also a family. And at its core, Christianity is not a religion, but it's a relationship. There are different demands on a family. So I'm saying we need to be aware of what time it is in our life. Is it time to go or is it time to stay? Time to fight? Is it time to rest? What is it? We need to be aware. I think we need to pay attention to the relationships we have very carefully. First, because we can't assume, to use Dad's idea, we can't assume that yesterday's faith is today's reality. We are all capable of struggling and having our faith shaken in ways that we could never anticipate. As the church, I think we should be ready to notice and try to figure out how to help. This, I think, is important. If we take each other for granted at a time when we're struggling deeply, we may do damage to the relationships as well as to the faith of those who are hurting. It's important to notice and at least to care. And as an aside, I think that is one of the big things. I really think that, like, if I break my leg, none of you can feel that pain for me. None of you can take that pain away from me. It's my responsibility. But your empathy, your understanding goes a long way. Right? And I think that when we see people in emotional pain or if they're going through great struggles in their life, I've been amazed by this. To simply validate that pain, to acknowledge it, and to say that it's important. I mean, you couldn't address my pain. But to validate pain is, I think, what frees a person up to let go. To let go of their pain. To know that it's safe. That they're still seen. That they're still noticed. That they're still cared for. Still their responsibility to work through their emotions and kind of get back on their feet. But I just think this is a big deal. That's a big way that we can help each other. Just being sensitive enough to say that's a big deal. I'm really sorry. On a happier note, Jesus told us that the world will know that we are his disciples by the way that we love one another. Was that a verse that did I type that one out? Yeah, John. Yeah. John 13, 34, 35, a new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, all men will know that you are my disciples. If you love one another. If you guys look at the world today, it's hurting. It is very, very much a hurting world. And if we can successfully find a way to love each other, it's going to stand out. It's going to look different. Love is hard to find in the world today. And Jesus modeled love for us in a way that if we just live it out, it's very counterintuitive. It's extremely counterintuitive the way that he modeled love for us. But if we're willing to do that, it will do tremendous good for the world. And it's also, as we love one another, we will build each other up. And once we build each other up, we will be able to go and fulfill the mission. I like to say that you can't give out of a deficit. If we help meet each other's needs as a community, we can have a surplus, and we can give from that surplus. Love is it's a hinge point. So, that's a whole lot of thoughts, but that's what I wanted to share here today, just kind of my story, my experience, and let's pray and close here. God, I just thank you so much for your patience. And I thank you that you're the one in control. Honestly, I look back at my story as well, and I don't see anything where it was like, I just decided I was going to do this. I decided I was going to have great faith, or I decided I was going to get through this or anything like that. Lord, it was really just you showing up. I needed that. I wasn't going to get there any other way. And I just thank you that you did show up eventually. Thank you that you won me to yourself, and just thank you for just the peace and the freedom that have been a part of my life ever since then, because it just, all my objections just laid flat. God, they just laid to rest. I appreciate that. I think that you want to do that for each one of us here. Thank you that you really do want to know us all in a deep relationship, and I just pray that you would help us to find our way to you. God, help us. I pray that you would be continuing to pursue us and just draw us into that kind of a relationship. And then as a family here at Lifehouse Church, I pray that you would give us an expression here in Decorah and in Northeast Iowa. God, give us an expression that we, as little old Lifehouse Church, can find a way to bring your love to others here in this area. In Jesus' name, amen.